Let's call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record indicate that it is 1:30 p.m. on Thursday, March 17th. Present today, we have Representative Wilson, Representative Guerra, Vice Chair Sadler, Representative Guttenberg, Representative Gaddis, myself, Co-Chair Thompson, and Co-Chair Newman. And I'm sure the rest of them will be showing up shortly. I just want to remind everybody that no electronic devices or cell phones should be used during committee. Today, we're going to hear House Bill 222 by Representative Hawker, and it's increase of appropriation item. Okay, we're going to have Ms. Lucky. Please come forward and put yourself on the record and begin the presentation of House Bill 222.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Thompson and the members of the House Finance Committee. My name is Julie Lucky, and I'm staff for Representative Mike Hawker, District 28. He regrets he is unable to be here today. He may or may not be online. I know he was going to try to call in, I guess, to keep tabs on my presentation. So House Bill 222 would codify a process to allow the legislature to prevent the governor from using the revised program legislative, which we know as RPLs, procedure from increasing funds for a particular specified budget item. As we all know, the legislature has the constitutional power and duty to appropriate. All appropriations must be authorized by law, meaning they must be included in the budget bill that we passed during our legislative session with the whole body voting on it. For some appropriation items, the exact amount may not be known when you all finalize the budget, or there may be additional funds that come available during the year while the legislature is not in session. In order to allow the governor to accept these funds, the legislature codified a process in the late 1970s that is called what we call our RPL process. And so, just to be clear, the RPL process can only be used to accept additional funds for existing budget items. So it has to be something that was included in the budget, and then additional funds become available. I can do a quick overview of the RPL process. I don't know how many of you have sat on the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee or are familiar with that. So if the committee would like me to do a quick overview, I'm happy to do that.
If you would, please.
Okay. So there are basically...
joined by Representative Kawasaki. I'm going to put that on the record. Go ahead, Ms. Lucky.
There are two necessary steps to the RPL process, and I have put some of the documents into your packets. The first step is to include language in the budget that allows an open-ended appropriation for specific types of receipts, and those are listed in Section 24, I believe, in both this year's budget and last year's budget, and I put a sample of last year's budget language into your packets. And that basically allows additional funds to be accepted as long as the process outlined in the statute in AS 3707080H is followed. And then, of course, the second step of that process is following that statute in 3707080H, which is that the governor submits the RPL to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. The submission of the RPL starts a 45-day clock, and at the end of that 45 days, the governor can expend the funds. It's important to note the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee is not required to hold a hearing on the RPLs. They are not required to take any action at all, and they have no authority to reject or reduce the funds. Giving the committee this authority, as I understand, would require a constitutional amendment, as that would be an improper delegation of duty. And I believe we do have Megan Wallace from Legislative Legal online to answer any constitutional questions. I think that that's above my pay grade. So the basic process is putting language in the budget and then following this process in statute. Generally, the legislative budget and audit practice is that the RPL comes in from the executive branch, legislative finance does a review of the RPL, and the budget and audit committee typically adds it to the next meeting's agenda for consideration. If they take action, they can take an action to approve the RPL, which basically means they agree with accepting the additional funds, and that would basically waive the 45-day waiting period and would allow the governor to use the funds or to accept and appropriate the funds immediately. Legislative Budget and Audit can also make a recommendation to reduce or reject getting the additional funds. However, this recommendation is not binding. Most of the time, the executive branch does respect the committee's recommendation, and they'll reduce the amount of funding, or they might think about that RPL and bring it back up at a later agenda, LBNA agenda, with some changes made by those recommendations. So if Legislative Budget and Audit rejects the RPL or chooses not to accept it, the governor can still use the funds after that 45-day waiting period. However, the governor must review, our statute requires that the governor review the request and then send LBNA a statement stating the reasons that the governor wants to expend the funds, notwithstanding LBNA's recommendation. What I've been able to find out about the RPL process is that the spirit of the law was to allow additional funds for already approved budget items to be accepted in a timely fashion when the legislature is not in session. Otherwise, if we did not have this process in place, all funds would have to be approved during the regular session budgeting process, so any funds that come in from May through December would basically have to wait until the legislature comes back into session. This interim, there was a situation where the RPL process was used to accept funds that had been rejected by the legislature during the budget process. While I would state this is a very unique case where we had a budget item that was approved by the full legislature, and yet the legislature chose not to accept additional funds for that particular item, it did uncover a basic problem in the process in which the legislature can't say not to exercise fully their power to appropriate, and it was seen by many to be an end run about the budget process and a threat to the balance of powers. As chair of Legislative Budget and Audit, Representative Hawker thought this was an important enough topic to bring to everyone's attention, so he talked to Legislative Legal about coming up with some possible solutions, and that led us to House Bill 222. Specifically, what House Bill 222 would allow the legislature to do is put in language that expressly prohibits using the RPL process for a specific appropriation item. So, to be very clear, the legislature would have to know in advance they did not want to accept additional funds on a specific item and would have to put that specific item, put language about that specific item into the budget as the budget was going through the process. This would just prohibit using this particular process, which is the RPL process going through LBNA for that particular item. This ensures the executive branch cannot use the RPL process to fund items that were considered but denied by the legislature during our regular budget deliberations. There is also a technical change in the bill. As we went through the process, as chairman of LBNA, our office was unclear about whether or not any action by LBNA would hasten the 45-day timeline. Legislative Legal's position was that the only way to make that timeline shorter was an approval vote by LBNA. So we had asked them to make that clear in the statute, make that technical change that makes it very clear that should LBNA choose to recommend to reject the funds, that doesn't actually make the timeline shorter, but the governor would still have to wait that initial 45-day period. So the bill doesn't make any changes to that 45-day period. It just clarifies that unless LBNA approves and takes an affirmative vote on the RPL, that initial 45-day waiting period would have to be honored. And I believe that David Teal, I'm not sure if he came in. He may be available online. I was hoping that he could be here to answer any questions about the RPL process. I know that we do have the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee aide, Pauline Swanson, here, and she can answer some questions specifically about RPLs. I haven't gone through that process with the committee. And I believe that Megan Wallace from Legislative Legal is also on hand to answer any legal or constitutional questions.
Ms. Wallace on the, she is online. Okay. Well, there she showed up.
And that concludes my presentation, Mr. Chairman.
All right, questions from committee members of Ms. Lucky. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Welcome, Julie.
Thank you.
You mentioned when I was on LBNA for several years, we would typically, a lot of the funds that came through were federal highway funds for some of the projects. They'd get some excess federal highway funds. And you'd mentioned the stipulation of the 45-day time period there. If I believe that some of those projects and those funds went to would affect projects that were under construction, so the money had already been approved by the legislature, you know, through the STIP appropriation process, but there was other funds that came in that they maybe would need during that construction season, we have a short construction season, and I just wondered what the thought was, you know, with the 45 days, if you extend it past 45 days or prior to 45 days, in that, if that could maybe affect projects like that, and you've seen plenty of these come through the process, so I know you're pretty familiar with it.
Mr. Co-Chairman, I believe that that is the reason that the 45-day waiting period can be shortened by the LBNA taking a positive approval vote. So if the money comes in, and that's why we have the process in place to begin with, is if the money comes in and Legislative Budget and Audit Committee has a meeting and the Department of Transportation, for instance, would come up and say, if we don't get these funds in 15 days, we're going to have a problem with this project, LBNA can then approve that RPL, and then the funds would be available, as I understand, immediately after that vote.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that. So that's a wonderful opportunity, I mean, to be able to take advantage of that, and then the committee can look at that and see the funds that are coming through.
And possibly not miss a construction season because of it, yes.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Vice Chairman Sadler.
Chancellor, I like
Vice
that.
Chancellor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We're going to inflate our time. While Ms. Lucky, through the chair, while this problem may have arisen during consideration of a program last year, I just want to make clear that this does not have to do with Medicaid. I've looked through the bill. I don't see the word Medicaid any place in the bill, and it's not your intent to affect the Medicaid expansion lawsuit in any way. Is that correct?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Sadler, that is correct. The bill came about because it exposed sort of a loophole, if you will, in the process by which if the legislature has the power to appropriate, then really it should be within their power to limit additional monies. This bill, one, does not have a retroactive effective date. It would not have any effect on RPLs that have already gone through the system. And my conjecture, and I Ledge Legal would probably be better to discuss this, but is that should you put a retroactive effective date on here, since the specific language was not included in the budget that would be required by this process, that it would have no effect on previous RPLs. However, it was an example of a time that the legislature had in full session found an appropriation item they did not want to add money to, but there was no process by which they could prohibit using this process. This would also not have any effect on the governor's ability to call the legislature back into session and have the full body review additional funds or any RPL that come up. That is totally within the governor's power still, and this would have no effect on that. The only thing this would do is allow the legislature to prohibit using a process that the legislature really had put in place to streamline this accepting of additional money and limit that to things that the legislature approves of.
Right. So it's not about Medicaid. Through the chair, so it's not about Medicaid. It's about the legislature making sure that it can and will use its appropriation authority properly and setting its limits on when the executive branch can or cannot seek to use our appropriation authority. Just got it. Thank you, sir.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you. So it's not about Medicaid expansion, but if this bill were to have been law prior to the governor's Medicaid expansion, would he not have been able to do this with the language in item H?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kawasaki, I would be more comfortable having Ledge Legal answer that question. The example of the Medicaid expansion is so complex with the required versus the mandatory versus non-mandatory and how the Supreme Court case affects that. I am unsure how it would really affect this particular thing because I'm not sure how much you could parse out that appropriation item. So I would defer that to Legislative Legal if that would be acceptable.
You're online.
Sure. I've got another question.
You want to follow up with another question?
Yeah, different question.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Julie. The the way I understood it, in the second page, line 3, the 45 days, those 45 days are referring to the original 45 days. It's not an additional 45 days, right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kawasaki, that is correct. We asked for a clarification of what legislative legal believed was the was what should be the current practice, and so this does say until the 45-day period has elapsed, and that is referring to the initial 45-day period.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Representative Gaddis, followed by Representative Guerra. Go ahead, Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what I'm hearing said is that we have a 90-day session to basically appropriate money, but outside of that 90-day session, this is an option that LBNA meets to be able to do their business outside of the session. So really where my question is, I'm thinking of other states that have a session every other year and certainly have short sessions as well. What do they do in this type of a situation as well? I guess I'm hearing what this does, but I'm wondering what other states do as well.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Gaddis, I would probably have to get back to you on that one. I did research the history of the RPL process here, but I hadn't looked at the other states, but I'm happy to get that information and get back to you.
Thank you. Sorry.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. welcome, Julie. I'm not going to ask you to research 4,900 other – I'm not going to ask you to research 49 other states. I'm not sure Representative Gaddis wants you to do that either. So we could save you some time, maybe. You had during your presentation, and I don't know if you recall, you were going through the presentation, and you said we're not doing that because that would be unconstitutional. But do you remember what that was that you were talking about? There was some issue that you said the bill doesn't address that would raise constitutional questions, and I didn't want to interrupt you, so, yeah.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Representative Garrett, I would defer a little bit to Megan Wallace, who is from Legislative Legal and online, but what I was referring to is that there have been some questions about why we can't allow legislative budget and audit to reject an RPL. And that's the process I was talking about, was that that is seen as an unconstitutional delegation of powers, would be to give, because the process, the way it works now, the executive branch is notified of the additional money, and they basically send us a notice saying, I plan to use this money, and in 45 days they can. And people have asked, well, why can't LBNA step in and say, no, we don't like that. Why does LBNA only have a recommendation option, basically? And it's my understanding that allowing LBNA to reject that funding would be an unconstitutional delegation of powers.
Through the chair.
Representative Guerra.
Only if you know, and that would be because they would be doing something that you believe is something the legislature as a whole should do? Is that the analysis?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Gary, yes, that is exactly the analysis.
All
right,
thanks.
All right, any further questions of Ms. Lucky right now? Hearing none, Representative Guttenberg, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lucky, how many times has a governor, all of the governors, requested or put an RPL in front of the LBNA committee that process has happened? I mean, it'll be for some capital projects, it could be from other programs, but LBNA doesn't meet every day. It meets a few times a year, or I'm not sure how monthly, and how many times was it of policy substantive issue, and how many times was it just a capital project or something else like that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guttenberg, I would be much more comfortable having David Teal answer that question. I did a little bit of review based on the last two fiscal years, and I've come up with fifteen separate RPLs. One was put in twice. I stopped at that point because that's when the ERA Act came through, and I will tell you, I think there were hundreds of RPLs during that time because we weren't exactly sure what we were going to be getting through the Recovery Act. And so as money came in, it was used for university projects. It was used just for a lot of various things. So the process is used widely. It's used for a lot of different things. There have been a few times that I noticed, I mean, generally the RPLs are just accepted because it's something that the legislature's already approved. It's already in the budget. We're just accepting additional funds. And I know that I think David Teal is now here, so I'm sure that he could answer a little bit more historically. As my review showed that there were a few capital projects that they deferred to the next capital budget, they felt it would be better considered by the full legislature. And our research has showed that since the process has been in place in the 70s, there have been seven times that the governor chose to spend the funds after the 45-day period had expired, as opposed where the Budget and Audit Committee said, we don't really agree with using these funds, and the money was spent anyway. I didn't see anything, and like I said, I would like to defer to David Teal because he has a longer history of these items than I do, where a policy call was made via an RPL. I think this is the first time in my memory that this has come up as an issue.
So if I may follow up.
Representative Guttenberg.
So you said seven times. What time period is that in?
I could just look at my notes real quick. Mr. Chairman, Representative Guttenberg, I guess the easy answer is that has been since 1979. However, the specific items happened, it looks like, in the early 90s, and the last one was in 1998.
Thank you.
Okay. At this time, I'm going to go to Legislative Legal. Megan Wallace, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Megan Wallace from Legislative Legal.
Yes, Representative Kawasaki had a question, I guess, to start with.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for being online, Megan. I have a couple questions just regarding the legality of a rejection of an RPL, so I'll start there. Does the legislature currently have authority to reject outright an RPL?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, no, they do not have the authority to reject. They can advise the governor that they do not approve the RPL, but in terms of having any authority to explicitly reject or prevent the expenditure after the 45-day period elapses, they don't have that power.
Thank you. And follow up?
Representative Kawasaki.
And on line 3 of the House Bill 22, it says, unless expressly prohibited by the language of the appropriation, would that, in effect, allow the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee to reject an RPL?
Through the chair, no. That language would allow the legislature in an appropriation bill, such as the operating budget, to insert language underneath an appropriation or an allocation that states that the RPL process is not to be used to increase the amount of that specific appropriation.
Representative Kawasaki.
So we're kind of dancing around the whole Medicaid subject, but if this had been a law before last year, would the governor not have been able to accept Medicaid expansion? The Medicaid expansion RPL?
Through the chair, as Julie noted, it's kind of a complex question. Even if the legislature were able to state that an appropriation item could not be increased through the RPL process, the general prohibition against changing substantive law in an appropriation bill would still be intact. And so while the legislature may have prevented the governor, if this bill had been law at the time, if there was language in the budget that said no, or this appropriation item cannot be increased, you know, through the RPL process or under 3707-080H, that would have merely prevented the governor from accepting additional Medicaid funds through that process. And it would not have affected the substantive legality of whether expansion was permitted or prohibited. And under our Medicaid statutes, we have provisions as to what happens if Medicaid is not fully funded. So in my opinion, if that had happened and they had not accepted the additional federal funds necessary to implement Medicaid expansion, you either would have had to prorate services under the substantive Medicaid provisions, or the governor hypothetically could have submitted a supplemental budget asking for the legislature to approve those funds, or called a special session or some way. But this just prohibits, this would just prohibit taking those additional federal receipts as they came available.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Guttenberg has a question, Ms. Wallace.
Thank you, Ms. Wallace. Continuing on the same train of thought, if this bill takes away, allows the budget to have written into it, preventing the governor from using the RPL process to add money to a program, is there another way that the governor can do that? Or does this shut the door on all avenues?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, this wouldn't prohibit the governor from using that process generally. It would only prohibit use of the RPL process under specific appropriations as requested or noted by the legislature. But even if hypothetically the legislature says underneath an appropriation or allocation that the RPL process is not to be used for this item, the governor could still introduce a supplemental appropriation or a separate appropriation bill asking the legislature to approve that increase.
If I may follow up.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. So that means during the interim, there would be no way for the governor to increase the funds into an appropriation or a program until the next legislature came in and he asked for a supplemental. Or could he still do that through Ledge Council or another avenue through Ledge Budget and Audit?
Through the chair, if the legislature wrote in or expressly prohibited that the 370708H process be used, then that would be correct. There would be no other avenue for the governor to accept those appropriations until the legislature went back into session and either a supplemental was approved or some other substantive legislative action was taken.
Okay. Would that action have to be in a positive, an affirmative action? Well, so let's go back to Medicaid expansion. So if the governor, if this was written in at that point that the Medicaid program couldn't use the RPL to expand it, the governor could not have expanded it until there was an appropriation in the next legislature, whether it was supplemental or otherwise. And the Medicaid, if he wanted to expand it, would have had to have been a new formula based upon proportion, I forget what the term is. But.
Through the chair, I think what would have happened is that if Medicaid was expanded and but there was a prohibition on receiving additional federal receipts as they became available under the RPL process, and the legislature did not approve the receipt of those additional funds, what would happen is that the proration statutes would take effect, because the Medicaid statutes don't differentiate between the expansion population and then the required categories. And so all Medicaid recipients would have seen their services and prorated per that statute. And I don't have that off the top of my head, but it would happen according to the process that's set up in statute.
Follow up, Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And since the 70s, since this was put into place, how many times has this been a substantive issue where it was a significant policy change? Do you have that? Is that are you the correct one to ask that question?
Through the chair, I have not looked into that issue recently, but this summer when I had done research, it was my understanding that the governor had only moved forward in a couple instances, and I'm not aware whether that was a substantial policy differentiate, or, you know, new policy was created through the acceptance of those funds after LBNA rejected, or whether, you know, it was kind of a mundane issue. So I don't have that off the top of my head.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Guttenberg. Representative Guerra, Ms. Wallace, has, Representative Guerra has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Megan. And by the way, on behalf of all of us, thanks for all your work during the budget. I know you were up late at night. So from what I understand, and the Medicaid money that comes to the state is not really differentiated between expansion money and non-expansion money. So if I'm just thinking of a hypothetical, we have some population spike, we somehow qualify for additional federal funds for Medicaid during the interim, the money comes in. If there were language in the budget saying the legislature can't accept additional Medicaid receipt authority or receipts during the off session, under this bill, the language would prevent that, and then folks' services would be prorated down. Is that fair, or have I made a few logical leaps in there?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, that's generally correct. Because the Medicaids are 4707020A, which is what requires Medicaid coverage for those required under federal law, because that provision does not differentiate between the expansion population and your kind of quote-unquote traditional Medicaid recipients, they both have coverage under that subsection. And so if the legislature prevents acceptance of additional federal receipts through the RPL process, and there's not enough funding to provide services for those required recipients under 4707020A, the proration statutes go into effect for all those recipients and would not differentiate between. It wouldn't, for example, we wouldn't just stop paying for the Medicaid expansion population. All Medicaid recipients would be affected by the proration.
Thank you. Through the chair.
Representative Guerra.
Thanks, Megan. Now, just a separate question. So we've always operated under the assumption, and I bet you most of us have never researched it, I haven't. We've always operated under the assumption that legislative intent language is really unenforceable, that constitutionally it's unenforceable. So how would legislative language under this bill saying the legislature can prohibit the acceptance of funds, how would that be constitutional?
Through the chair, generally intent language is unenforceable. For example, if it would have the effect of amending or changing existing law, but language is appropriate in the budget if it explains how an appropriation is to be spent or explains an item of appropriation. And so in this case, if the language merely stated something along the lines of this appropriation item may not be increased under 3707080H, it's not, it likely would not be deemed unconstitutional because it's just describing the appropriation. And because you are making the substantive change here in the bill, it lines up, they would go hand in hand, meaning that you have the statutory authority to put that language in the budget, so the language wouldn't have the effect of amending existing law. If you want to look at it transversely, if you tried to put that kind of language in the bill now without the bill being passed, it may not work because it may have the effect of amending existing law.
I believe Ms. Lucky has a comment on this topic.
And, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make it clear for the record, as I discussed earlier, the RPL process is really a two-step process. So we do have the process outlined in statute, but the governor doesn't have the basically the authority to accept the RPLs. He has granted that authority every year in the budget. So it is something that the legislature grants him, and it's in Section 24 of last year's budget, which you have in your packets. So I just want to point out that that is something that is granted. Another option could be that the legislature may choose that no RPLs get accepted. That's perfectly constitutional. So they could just leave out that section and say, we're not granting the executive branch the power to use this process to accept additional funds. I just want to point that out, that it is something that, that every year is reaffirmed by the legislature. And so the chairman's, Representative Hawker's feeling and my concurrence, and I believe Ms. Wallace's concurrence, is that making a change to this particular, limiting that power, which is a power that we grant every year in the budget, would meet a constitutional challenge.
And Co-Chair Newman has a comment on that topic.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Ms. Wallace,
mm-hmm.
I believe that we heard that Ms. Lucky just say that if the legislature did not put a project into the budget or into an appropriations bill, that would be, I wasn't quite sure if that would be an indication that the legislature did not have a predetermined decision made on whether to accept those funds or not. I guess the question I had comes to that in a different way of, would an item have to be predetermined by the legislature? Would the legislature have to say, we do not want to accept specific funds prior, or by the legislature not including it into an appropriation item or an appropriation bill, would that make it so that that makes that statement on behalf of the legislature that they have not determined to accept those funds because there's no portion of that has been prior or previously included in an appropriations bill?
Mr. Chairman, the RPL process can only be used for appropriations that exist in the budget. So remember, we are only talking about this one particular process in the statute, and it is limited to additional funds for items that already are in the budget.
Correct, Mr. Chair. I just wanted a clarification that we did not have to state that we did not want to accept funds, that it's already determined that we don't want to accept them by not including it in appropriations bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there further questions of Ms. Wallace? Yep. Seeing none, yes, Representative Guerra has one.
I guess I'm not sure if this is for Ms. Lucky, Ms. Wallace, but I mean, it seems to me that you could somehow write language under this bill, if this bill were to pass, that would prohibit a category of money that you didn't intend to prohibit. The money comes in from the feds, and I guess you'd either have to wait till January or call a special session. So $50 million of money comes in that you weren't really thinking about, that pot of money. It falls within the definition of something that you said you wanted to block in the appropriations budget you passed that prior year. If the governor felt like we really needed that money before next January, you'd have to call a special session, right? Is that how it would work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, exactly. That's how it would work.
All right. Any further questions of Ms. Wallace? Megan, thank
Mr.
you
Chair.
For being maybe you should hang online just for a few minutes. Oops. Representative Guttenberg does have a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Wallace, in the handout that we have, that is a page out of HB 72 that's outlined, it talks about federal receipts. Do you have that? I want to make
I
sure.
Do.
Okay. So it talks about federal receipts starting on line 19, federal receipts, designated program receipts. And then it goes on to name a couple of specific programs, the university, the Exxon Valdez Fund, Alaska Housing. Is this, how delineated is this list? How much more detail would you need if you were to not want to allow something to go under the RPL process? Would you have to list all the programs that are in the budget or just the specific ones that you're not allowing?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, Section 24 that you have before you is a general allowance of federal receipts or those other program receipts that are received during the interim, that section serves as the appropriation by the legislature conditioned on compliance with the RPL process. So that appropriation language serves as the appropriation by the legislature for the receipt of those federal or other program receipts during the interim with no restriction. So if it was the legislature's intent to prohibit the RPL process to be used to increase an appropriation item, language would either need to be inserted under that specific appropriation, whether it's in the number section or the language section, expressly saying this appropriation may not be increased through the process under 3707080H, or in this section itself, section 24, if there was an explicit reference to an exclusion, that would likely be sufficient to prohibit the increase. But you would need some kind of express prohibition. Otherwise, this item would serve as authority to go ahead and increase an existing appropriation based on the receipt of additional federal or other program receipts.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Co-Chair Newman.
Mr. Chair, can I follow through on that question?
Follow through on yours, Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. So Section 24A is outlined. Section 24 looks like it's a denial of the state's ability to expand Medicaid. How is that different?
Through the chair, subsection B, which was just an item in the HB 72, the FY16 operating budget, it's not standard language. It was language inserted, kind of what we call one-time only language. And the reason that that's different is because it has the effect of amending existing law under a complicated legal analysis as to whether expanded Medicaid expansion recipients fall under the required category under substantive law. So it has the effect of changing the way our substantive Medicaid provisions are interpreted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions of Ms. Wallace? Seeing none, stay on the line for a little bit. We never know when we're going to have to come back. Does any of the members have any questions for Mr. Teal? He's in the room now. Representative Guerra does. So, David, would you come up, please?
Actually, it's for Ms. Wallace.
For Ms. Wallace. Okay. Ms. Wallace, you're still there?
I am.
Thanks,
Representative
Megan.
Representative Guerra.
I may have misunderstood this before. But so, I mean, let's just say the legislature were to put in language, if this bill passed, that says the state can't accept any RPL, any funds during the interim for Medicaid expansion, any additional funds. But from my understanding, Medicaid expansion funds and Medicaid funds are not really divisible. They're just treated as Medicaid funds. So what would happen in that case? Would we be prohibiting all Medicaid additional funds from coming in during the interim?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, it goes back to if we had some prohibition against receiving additional Medicaid receipts as they become available and you needed those to fully fund Medicaid, the governor would either have to submit a supplemental appropriation request or another appropriation bill asking the legislature to approve those, the receipt of those federal funds, or the prorated, proration would kick in and the services for Medicaid recipients would be affected.
And just to ask more clearly through the chair,
Representative Guerra.
Sure. I think you answered that, Megan, but I just want to make clear. So if we try to ban the acceptance during the off session of Medicaid expansion funds, we would also be banning the acceptance of additional Medicaid funds even for the non-expansion population too? Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Gehr, that's correct. There's no differentiation between Medicaid funds for the expansion population or what you would call your traditional Medicaid recipients.
Thank you.
All right. Seeing no further questions of Ms. Wallace, does anybody have any questions for Mr. David Teal? Seeing none. Any further comments or questions from the committee of the sponsor? Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to be real clear that I can Google and intend to the other states, so I wanted to be clear that I didn't intend for Ms. Lucky to do that work. So
okay.
I wanted to put that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gaddis. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just again, the conversation seems to have gone right back to Medicaid over and over again. This is not intended to address Medicaid expansion. This is for any other program, a revised program language. Is that correct? Just want to make sure the intent is clear.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sadler, that's correct. It is basically shoring up a rules-based system where we have the power. We have the power to appropriate. We, the legislature, not me, of course, because I'm not a legislator. Sorry. The legislature has the power to appropriate. The legislature chooses to appropriate basically these additional unknown funds via Section 24, and it is a way to limit that appropriation, which is made in the budget bill with a vote of the full legislature. It does not specifically deal with Medicaid funds, and as has been discussed in this committee, based on the nature of the Medicaid appropriation, it is unclear whether this process would have affected that ability other than affecting the ability to get funds above and beyond what the legislature had put into the budget. And if I can clarify, and it might be better to have David Teal do this. Unfortunately, I'm not a budget person, but it's my understanding that the legislature could choose to account for, the amount of federal money that they are comfortable with spending in the budget process, and then if it regardless of when it comes in, we wouldn't need additional federal receipt authority. But I would prefer to have David Teal.
Before you go there.
Before we go, Representative Sadler has one more.
Thank you, through the chair. I did hear an awful lot of conjecture and a lot of what if and if this were the case and a lot of hypotheticals. But what is the entire universe of other programs, federal programs, that this might apply to? I'm not going to ask you each, but is there any limitations to the?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I would prefer to have Mr. Teal answer that if he could. I'm unfortunately not an expert on the budget, but I have looked a lot at this process, but that's kind of out of the scope of my knowledge.
Thank you.
Mr. Teal, would you like to come forward, place yourself on the record, and try to clarify some of the budget items?
Not really.
Not really.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance Division. And on that particular point, there any allocation, any program that uses federal receipts would be eligible for this review. Also, if you read Section 24, it's not just federal receipts, it's Exxon Valdez. And just to clarify something that occurred earlier, which was how many times has the 45-day rule been used? 7 or so, about half of them are Exxon Valdez related RPLs. So issues come and go. That one is one that has gone away, I believe. But there are a number of other receipts listed, including the university's receipts, Marine Highway Fund, and so on. So that, again, this applies to any program that uses any of the receipt types listed in Section 24 or its section, similar language that appears in other budget years.
So, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess I want to ask the same question, although I did hear hypotheticals and conjecturals. Again, your understanding is this is not intended to affect, this is not intended specifically to target the Medicaid program.
Through the chair, I don't think it can be. Medicaid has already been expanded. The program can't be differentiated between expanded population and before and pre-expansion population. So what you're really doing here is I don't disagree with anything that Ms. Lucky or Megan Wallace have said. I think there's still perhaps some confusion about exactly what this means, but I think the intent is very clear that unless an appropriation passed by the full legislature specifically says what this intent is if we say in an appropriation bill that you cannot go through LBNA and use the RPL process, then you can't. You cannot do that, as is done in 24B, because that's trying to use an appropriation bill to change substantive law. Once you have substantive law changed, then the appropriation bill can do that. So does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions, Mr. Teal, Representative Guerra?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. David, so actually I'm just honestly a little bit confused by something that isn't really even the bill. It's this handout with Section 24 from, I guess, last year's HB 72. So just under the RPL process as it exists right now, if funds come in, let's just say they're federal funds, they come in, they're relevant to an appropriation that's in the budget, but they're excess money for that appropriation. We go through the RPL process. Section 24 seems to limit those permissible funds to certain areas, and I know that wasn't the intention, but it lists Exxon Valdez money, AHFC money, some Marine Highway money. But under current law, wouldn't any additional funds that relate to an appropriation be allowable and accepted, though, through the RPL statutes right now? What's the purpose of listing these examples here in Section 24?
Representative Guerra, through the chair, the purpose is to limit the fund sources that can be approved via an RPL. To give you an example, until about 2000, this section listed general fund program receipts as an allowable fund source. That was removed because during the five-year plan of the late 90s, when there was an effort to reduce general fund spending, the legislature discovered that executive branch agencies would come in and, okay, I can reach my target, I'll just cut my general fund program receipts, and you're counting that as a general fund reduction. We made our target, and now I'll go to LBNA and restore them all. General fund program receipts were removed from the list. And agencies can no longer bring a request for additional GF program receipt authority to LBNA for approval. So the fund sources that are listed are important. If they're not listed, then it's not a valid RPL. There's another point here that Representative Newman brought up about, well, does leaving an item out of the budget indicate that an RPL is not allowed? And there, I think the answer in operating is no, because the operating budget is always broad, and an RPL doesn't have to be something that's addressed in the operating budget already. It just has to meet, does this new program, this new money, fall under your general responsibilities? If it does, then you can use the RPL process. However, on the capital side, the ruling is that you can increase a capital project that was approved by the legislature. But if there's not an existing capital project for that purpose, you cannot use the RPL process because that project has not been approved by the full legislature. So capital operating RPLs differ. That's why the RPL language appears in both operating and capital budgets.
All right. Representative Kawasaki has a question, David.
Thank you. I think I heard you say something, but I'm not really sure. I was on LBNA one time, but I think that you said that if it absent of an appropriation within the budget, the RPL process is still the way for LBNA to accept an appropriation, or I worded it differently, but
through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, exactly, and that was what I was just saying, that you cannot come in with a brand new capital project, but if there is take some typical RPLs, money comes in for some foundation that wants to give the Department of Education money for some school program. It's not in our budget now, but it falls under the general responsibilities of the Department of Education, and they can accept that new money even though there's no existing program. So, again, capital versus operating differs, and on the operating side, you can come in with an RPL that is not a specific program that exists in the current operating budget.
Okay. Follow-up?
Andy Kawasaki.
Maybe I'll have to go back through the Executive Budget Act, but in the 222, it specifically talks about an increase of an appropriation. It doesn't talk about a new appropriation. So maybe that's probably somewhere else in there then. Is that right?
through the chair, an increase of an appropriation just means you can be going from zero to $10,000. That's an increase of an appropriation, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to start at $10,000 and then you can increase it.
Huh. All right.
So just follow up, just really quick. An example, President Obama has recently talked about early education and pre-K. It's not a current part of our budget, but if there were federal funds that were coming to states, if Alaska were to receive those funds, would that be the RPL process? Would that be the process by which we would accept those federal funds for early education?
Through the chair, that's a perfect example of the ability to accept an operating RPL for federal receipts.
Any further questions of David Teal? Seeing none, thank you very much, David. Any further comments or questions from committee members? Ms. Lucky, do you have any closing comments?
No, Mr. Chairman.
All right. At this time, we're going to set House Bill 222 aside. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
Next House Finance Committee meeting is scheduled for Friday, March 18th at 1:30. We were scheduled to hear from Professor Scott Goldsmith, but due to scheduling, we will be hearing from Professor Goldsmith at a later date, and we will be hearing bills previously heard or scheduled. With that, at 2:30 p.m., we are adjourned.